Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, September 9th, and I am your host, Magnus Teeveld, and joining me in the studio today are...
Peter R.H.
and Stephen Pham.
And I think Hannah Fraser from The Peak might be joining us a little later. We have a good show for you today, some reports from around the province, and then Stephen's got some arts reports for us. What are you going to talk about?
Yeah, I was able to speak in August with Fanny Cerzeur, cultural department director for the new Alliance Française building in Vancouver. They've got an absolutely stunning building that's just opened. And I also recently spoke with Curtis Wallachuk, who's the director of programming for the Vancouver International Film Festival. So I want to talk about both things.
Great, that's coming up really soon. And Peter, what are you talking about?
Well, among other things, eating live goldfish. That is so, I mean, it's funny that it sounds corny. Have you ever heard of this, Magnus, from another era?
I've heard of it.
But it's kind of gross. It's like the goldfish is live and you eat it. And it's passé since the 1950s, I think.
Isn't that like in oysters, basically? Like goldfish?
And then there was phone booth stuffing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to bring up Mad Magazine from 1964. Called The College Crowd. They had the lighter side was Dave Berg.
Right.
Some of the stuff he did.
So let me guess, you're going to talk about fraternities?
I'm also going to talk about the film National Lampoon's Animal House.
Okay.
Why I don't care for it.
Oh, come on.
All right. Okay. We also have Gardening with Embark coming up later in the program. And as I say, hopefully Hannah Fraser will be here from The Peak. So let's get going with the show. In northern BC, the Gitien Now Haredi chiefs have established a blockade in the Kispiox Valley to block LNG development. Dan Messick reports on this.
You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio.
Sorry about that. We're going to shift to our second story here. Just give me a second. Bears are out in force as they get ready for the winter hibernation, and they're making their way into urban areas. That's particularly relevant to our region here because, of course, here where we are in Burnaby Mountain, there was actually a bear spotted on campus just last week. I saw on social media. And throughout much of our listening area, people are kind of on the urban, rural wilderness fringe. You don't have to be backed up against the forest to have bears show up in your backyard. So it's really important to be a bear smart. This is a report from Lauren McKenzie. Oh, hang on.
Magnus is hard at work here, everybody. We're still on the air. Don't worry.
Yeah, we're still here. Why will this not work? All right, well, Why don't we go with you, Stephen?
Right.
All our wonderful technology and reports from far afield are just not cooperating today.
That's how good. I mean, you know, to be fair, someone was asking me this morning, have you got bears in your area? I'm just like, why? Where did that question come from? It seemed like to come out of left field. It turns out, no, it's been like all over social media and people have been talking about it. So I guess that's why. I'm here to talk about two things. The first thing I'm going to talk about is I had a really nice chat with Fanny Sozier of the Alliance Française recently. Alliance Française has a wonderful, refurbished, brand new building. It used to be in a sort of, Alliance Française has been kind of a bedrock of the Francophone community and those aspiring to join it. Like me, in British Columbia for a very long time, doing layman's work. But as you know, if you visit it, the building itself is a little bit decrepit before, and it's kind of running past its shelf life. And now they've got a brand new building; it just opened, and they've got a ton of super interesting programming. So I talked about that with Fanny, and one thing we talked about is, French language instruction, French language kind of cultural immersion in North America in general has a little bit of a fusty reputation. It's kind of like people who want to study abroad or whatever. But I think French language can be super sharp, could be super hip, could be super interesting. And I think that vision has been realized in the new building, in the sense that. I was talking, for example, they have a really cool VR program they'll provide you with VR, and they have a theater kind of cinema type experience, mm-hmm. and you can experience kind of the French language kind of films and culture and music shows, kind of really immersive setting. And it's kind of stuff like that. But also they have a lot of family-oriented programming because a lot of the clientele of the Alliance Française is really kind of French language families who've got really young kids growing up in Vancouver, and they want to be able to expose their kids to a reasonable degree of French culture immersion. And so they've got a ton of, sort of kid-friendly, family-friendly programming, cooking classes and stuff like that, but also kind of just really new programming. And the building itself is like an architectural marvel. It's kind of this really sleek, sort of hyper postmodernist kind of pale wood kind of situation. I'm really, really excited to go and actually participate in events. I encourage everyone else to do the same. That's the first thing. The second thing is I had a really kind of in-depth philosophical discussion with Curtis Wolochek of Vancouver International Film Festival. And the gist of the discussion, he's the director of programming there. So, this is the 43rd Vancouver International Film Festival. And it's happening September 26th to October 6th of this year. And it's going to have more than 350 screenings, dozens of filmmaker Q&As, talks with top creatives, live performances, artists and industry development programs, parties, and many more celebrations of film culture. It showcases more than 150 features, including more than 70 premieres and 81 shorts. VIF 2024 is a festival of unrepeatable experiences, so they claim. And especially a really neat feature this year, and I was able to have a really brief chat with the director of this, Jared Martineau, is that they're going to have symphonic special events and VIF Live, which is not kind of like just a thing where you project stuff into the screen. It's also a thing where it'll be integrated with musical and other live artistic performances. And if I remember from my chat with Jarrett, it's happening at the Chan Center as well as the Real Theater. So they're really kind of taking into consideration the sort of the genesis and the evolution of film culture and film buff culture mm-hmm. in Vancouver. Because as you know, the real theater is sort of like the beating heart of kind of for Vancouver film buffs, indie film culture in Vancouver. The festival will officially open with Ari's Theme by local filmmakers Jeff Lee Petrie and Nathan Drillot, a beautifully made documentary about British Columbia composer Eric Carnarthy. And they will also have a range of really sort of interesting content. I think one thing they really sort of went out of their way to highlight this year is Indigenous content. And it's not just Indigenous content from the Pacific Northwest, but also, you know, there's a lot of stuff about the Inuit culture, Inuit societies, and their kind of their triumphs and challenges as they navigate their relationship with Canadian society and with modernity, really, and postmodernity. It's not, you know, we're no longer in the 20th century, right? And they really are emphasizing VIFF Live, which pushes the boundaries of traditional film festival programming by intersecting screen culture with music in unique live shows. There will be talks, you know, VIFF talks, which bring together industry leaders who share insights. And there will be an industry program that kind of deals with the creative disruptors. So, and there's last but not least, there's VIFF Amp, which examines the essential role of music in film. And I just want to sort of close with I had a philosophical discussion with Curtis Wallachek, and I was kind of like, Curtis, like, what kind of films getting entry into VIFF and other similar festivals, you know, like Sundance or whatever? And he's like, look, you know, we have both fictional and sort of non-fictional, like documentary-type films, but the most important thing we're looking for is for people to have their own artistic voice, right? It's not just, it's about telling a good story, but at this stage about celebrating indigenous, independent, and other filmmakers, it's about helping them find the voice, find their own aesthetic. And that will be kind of the thread that connects their works throughout their careers. That's kind of how incubators, kind of how ecosystems like these help build out, you know, creative filmmakers and industry professionals in the future. Because anyone can tell a story, and many people can tell it well, but the true mark of an artist, of an auteur, is having their own voice. You know, you watch a Kurosawa film, Akira Kurosawa film, you can immediately tell it's a Kurosawa film because, you know, the frame is centered like a Renoir, like it's a beautiful framing, and I think that goes for every film. So I mean, if you're an aspiring student filmmaker or aspiring student screen industry professional, I think that's something I think you always want to keep in mind. How do you develop your own voice? How do you develop your own aesthetic so that you stand out as distinctive? As you go and, you know, watch these films and enjoy the interactions, something to keep in the back of your mind.
Excellent. Yeah, the VIFF is always quite an event every year here in Vancouver. You know, it can be a really great experience to get a pass so you can go to as many films as you can. I have friends who do that. I don't have, you know, I'm a parent and stuff. I don't have enough time to really do that, but it's always some amazing films. And it's sort of, you know, I think it's an interesting time for movies in the sense that, you know, the advent of streaming and having so many films move to streaming pretty quickly has, in some ways, I would say, you know, taken some of the shine off the movies. You know, the movies used to be really special, a unique kind of thing.
Right.
And it doesn't feel quite that way anymore. There isn't quite the culture and excitement around movies as there used to be. But maybe there should be, because, you know, a lot of what ordinarily comes to the cinema is the big blockbuster movies and the superhero movies. And what something like the VIFF creates an opportunity for, of course, is a chance to see and experience all those films of a different sort that are, you know, telling different kinds of stories, not that blockbuster story, but, you know, more individual stories and more perhaps, you know, you know, art films and whatnot.
Yeah, so I actually chatted about a film I saw several years ago at the VIF, which is a film about Filipino Canadians, essentially about, you know, the children of Filipino Canadian carers who initially get left behind in the Philippines, and they grew up and they finally get reunited as teenagers and as adults with their parents. And kind of it talks about the challenges and triumphs and tears associated with kind of this, what it takes for their moms to, you know, essentially earn the income to help them develop as human beings. And actually, they're coming out this year with a sequel for this because it's been such a moving short film. And but I also kind of I think this is also why the whole kind of format, the whole kind of typology of shorts is so important. I was having a discussion with Matt Zeitlin, who is kind of a culture and finance reporter down in the States, and he writes for I think New York Magazine, or used to anyways. And he was saying that, you know, like one thing that really made the full-length kind of TV features really successful of the golden era, the first generation of prestige TV. So, you know, Sopranos, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, all these things. What made it really successful is the directors who kind of formulated these shows spent like a decade or more making the standard TV kind of routine, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they made Seinfeld, they made Friends, they made all these like standard kind of TV route kind of things. And so they learned pacing, they learned how to have the big A plot and then there's a B plot every episode, and it's the pacing is really good, right? You watch a Mad Men episode, there's a story every episode, but it keeps coming back. Same thing with Breaking Bad, same thing with especially Sopranos, obviously. The thing that's kind of happening a lot with streaming, and I think the reason streaming has become a little bit of a disappointing experience for many people, is that streaming doesn't have very good pacing. And I think that's because everyone's now kind of aiming to do sort of like the 4-hour or 8-hour feature length kind of series. But if you don't learn how to kind of pace your movies properly, so there's a kind of always something going on, it gets a little bit laggy and people get a little bit tired and, you know, they tune out and don't finish the series. And then so I think obviously one way is for people to just make good network television, but another way is to start out making really good shorts. And because shorts, you have to be as taut, as succinct as possible. So I think even though, you know, people don't crowd into big theaters to watch shorts normally, obviously at VIF it's different. That's why it exists and that's why we celebrate it. I think it's a really important art form for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Thanks. When is the VIF starting? It comes up at the end of the month.
So VIF is starting on September 26th and running until October 6th. So it's running for, you know, 9-10 days, something like that. And it's going to be absolutely jam packed with events and features and so forth. And I just want to add a little bit of word on Fanny. On Alliance Française, because they really have a really good program, and the new building is going to be at 6161 Canby Street, and it's a $24 million 30,000 square foot community hub.
So that's going to be downtown, or
6061. I think it's like south Vancouver.
It's close to 49th.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in that whole community kind of event space area, right? And it's going to have a boutique art gallery. It's going to have a 165-seat professional theater, which offers smaller size arts organizations and touring acts a critically needed performance venue. Mm-hmm. I actually spoke to Fanny specifically about this because, you know, like usually people try and have a little bit of a cinema and a little bit of a theater. And it's a little bit tricky to get the acoustics right, but it turns out this time they've really put the effort in, and it's acoustically tuned, and it's just like a professionally grade performance venue. So that's gonna be right at the heart of South Vancouver, where there's just not a lot of these venues really. So that's gonna be really interesting, especially if you're doing something like chamber music. I personally hope they do a lot of François Couperon, so the French Baroque. But we will see about that. And they also have a 2,700 square feet of artist studio space, which will be really neat. And it will also have a bistro, media. Let's get some good French food. Media library, classroom for French lessons, and a fully equipped demonstration kitchen for cooking classes.
It's close to Langara campus. I went in there by accident just a little while ago on the new one. So it's it's kind of half a block or a block and a half from 49th north of it on Cambie, and it's close to what the Langara College.
Great, and that's open now, Stephen?
It opened actually on July 22nd. It was unveiled in July 22nd, and it was officially opened on the 14th of August. So it is absolutely open now.
Great.
Go anytime. And this is actually the 120th anniversary of the Alliance Française here. So it's a really sort of auspicious time for them to be launching this. And it's also a really sustainable, light-filled building. So there's so much to like. And I'm a huge fan of Alliance Française. I always, grew up, I like everyone else, I took French classes at school. I was terrible at it. I was not very much good. I always wished I would, kind of supplement my French instruction at Alliance Française. Never got around to doing it, but hey, maybe I do it now. Maybe combine with some cooking classes. So I encourage everyone to go.
Excellent. Thanks for that report, Stephen.
No worries.
So just want to get back to our story about the Gitye now and their blockade up in northern BC in the Kispiak Valley of the development of an LNG pipeline and processing plant. That's been going on for a little while, and it's kind of an interesting situation because the Gitye Now and their hereditary chiefs are the ones leading this protest, but it's their neighbors, the Nishka, who are the owners and proponents of the pipeline. So it creates a bit of a different problem. But I think we're going to see more of these kinds of situations coming up in BC as more First Nations engage in economic development and start pushing these kinds of projects, which may or may not sit well with some of their neighbors. And, of course, in many cases, a lot of the issues related to land claims and territory, which are in the ongoing treaty process with the province and the federal government, for many First Nations remain unresolved. We do have a report on that, but it's longer than we can fit into today's program, but we will be running that tomorrow on Speak Up at 10:30. Goes quite extensively into the issues of the LNG development and the position of the Gitye Now chiefs, as well as what the Nishka have to say and the many issues related to that. So tune in tomorrow at 10:30 on Speak Up for that, and we'll get back to our bear report. Hopefully, I'm hoping this is going to work properly for us this time. As I was saying before, bears are getting ready for their winter hibernation, and they are coming around looking for easy pickings. And it's important to be bear smart.
This is a CHY News update. With fall around the corner, black bears will be seeking to fatten up for the winter on the coast. During this time, WildSafe BC is reminding everyone to create a bear-safe neighborhood. WildSafe BC is an organization that offers education on preventing conflicts with wildlife. Gabrielle Du-Romeri is a communication specialist for WildSafe BC. She says in the fall, bears will appear more often in communities due to hyperplasia, which causes an increase in hunger.
It is really important that we're aware of that in the fall time, and that anyone who owns a home, has a property, is managing their attractant when it comes to the garbage. That's super important, as well as a few other things that could potentially bring bears or other wildlife in.
Kira Brown is the Nanaimo coordinator for WildSafe BC. She says they have seen continuing reports of interactions with bears that will only continue as the city continues to develop. In Nanaimo, she says while areas in the north and south end of Nanaimo or near the highway get the most reports of bears, anywhere with greenery or forest can attract bears.
But I think one of the things that's important when we talk to people is that although we focus on kind of these big animals, and I know that cougars are, for example, a really big thing in Nanaimo, is that they're pretty much seen throughout the city.
DuRomeri says there's many reasons why a bear might be attracted to a certain neighborhood. Homeowners may put out their garbage bins the night before pickup. There may also be food in bird feeders, dirty barbecues, or fallen fruit from fruit trees.
This is about the time that we'd recommend they just be taken down altogether, with bears going into this hyperphagia phase where they're looking for as many and as much calories as possible. About 1 kilogram of bird seed is equivalent to 7,000-8,000 calories. So they know that, and they'll take advantage of bird seed. It's a bit of a shock sometimes to think that they go after something that small, but they do.
DuRomeri explains that bears are usually just passing through, getting from one spot to another. But she says because of this, it's important to not encourage the animals to veer off their track and linger in urban areas longer than they need to.
That's when they put themselves in danger. And then also when we see humans start to be a little bit of afraid of these creatures when they really should be admired, right? Where it's sad when I hear people are afraid of bears. I understand there's risks when we get close to bears, but otherwise they're very peaceful creatures and they really don't want any trouble with us either.
DuRomeri says the first step to making sure bears do not veer into your property is to look at how you store your garbage cans.
About 60% of the black bear conflicts that we see called in usually involve garbage in those reports. So really, really important to make sure that you have somewhere secure and usually indoors to store your garbage. So that can be a shed or your garage. Just making sure that it is as inaccessible to wildlife as possible.
She also recommends not keeping pet food outside and not having bird feeders out during bears' hyperphagia phase. She also recommends cleaning barbecues and picking up fallen fruit. In Nanaimo, there's a gleaning program run through the Nanaimo Food Share Society and the Nanaimo Community Garden Society, where volunteer gleaners pick up fruit and vegetables from backyards and gardens that would otherwise be wasted or left for wildlife. DuRomeri says it's not just about keeping bears out of trash or backyards, but also about other wild animals. She says it comes down to keeping wild animals wild and not doing anything that may attract them to your household or neighborhood.
We're like, oh, deer aren't harmful, so let's go ahead and leave some carrots and apples out for them. Well, cougars eat deer. That's one of their main prey sources. So if we are allowing deer to hang out in the community, it doesn't take long for the larger predators to follow afterward.
For Brown's job, she does a lot of door-to-door work around Nanaimo, where she sees people store their garbage bins outside or place their bins out for pickup the night before.
One of the main things that I talk to people about is trying to get people out of that habit, to make them aware that just because it's kind of common practice right now in Nanaimo for a lot of people to see their neighbors doing that, that they actually need to know that there is wildlife in Nanaimo. And that
one thing Brown has been doing during her door-to-door work is tagging bins that have been placed outside on the curb prior to collection day.
And I always make sure to include my email on that, so that if they do have any further questions, I know ignorance is a big part of it, and so that I'm just a source that they can always ask anything towards.
The City of Nanaimo recommends on its garbage and recycling webpage that residents keep their carts secured from wildlife and only place carts out at the curb on the morning of collection day, as close as possible to the 8 a.m. collection time. Brown says that for people who store their garbage outside, it usually comes down to a homeowner not knowing the effects it could cause with bears.
Yeah, I honestly think that a lot of people that I'm talking to where we've seen a report of bears eating out of people's garbages, I go to talk to their neighbors and they are shocked to hear that a bear has been in their neighborhood. It's such a foreign concept to them. And I think a lot of people don't think that their neighborhood it applies to until there's a bear that they see in the morning. And that can be quite a scare for a lot of people.
Throughout September, WildSafe BC is running its BC Goes Wild campaign, celebrating wildlife diversity across the province. During the month, every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to noon, Brown will be tabling at the Nanaimo North, Vancouver Island Regional Library on Hammond Bay Road. There, she'll be answering any questions about local wildlife and WildSafe BC. For CGY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you.
And thanks to our friends at CHOY and Nanaimo for that. Very important to keep your surroundings of your home and whatnot bear safe, or you may have one it's in your yard, which might be exciting to see, but maybe not so cool for your small pets and small humans. Let's take a quick look at the weather here before we get to Hannah Fraser from the Peak. It's a kind of typical September week this week. It's going to be rain up to 21 degrees today, down to lows of 13 overnight. Mix sun and cloud tomorrow, and then the cloud moves in for a couple of days. We might get a little sun on Thursday, but other than that, it's kind of a mix of cloud and rain and not bad temperatures, varying between 20 and 17, 18 degrees and 20 degrees during the daytime, cooling off down to 12 or 13 degrees overnight. And joining us in the studio now is Hannah Fraser from The Peak. The Peak is, of course, Simon Fraser University's student newspaper. Been here since 1965. Welcome, Hannah.
That's right. Thanks so much for having me back.